Here we are, back again, time for a short talk, some guidance on meditation practice, etc. So I hope you are enjoying yourself, hope you're having a good time, and maybe this is a bit too, let's see if I can move it a little bit, I think it's not quite working. Okay, how is that, can you hear okay? Yeah, good, okay. So I hope you are enjoying yourself. If not, you can always ask me some questions during the interview time and say, why is it that I'm not getting the sort of happiness that the meditation promises? And this is one of the themes of the talk now. It's going to be I'm going to read out a little bit one of the discourses of the Buddha. And this is about meditation practice itself, how it is supposed to work when it works ideally, right? So this is the ideal. It's very rare that you kind of get all the way up to this ideal, but at least it gives you some idea of where or how Buddhist meditation is supposed to work when it really works very well. And it gives you good guidance for this. It's always good to have this map in your head, because when you have the map and you have clarity about where it's supposed to go, at least you can direct yourself in the right way, and that, of course, is very useful. So what this particular discourse or sutta is the Pali word for discourse, is about, it is about how you're supposed to experience the progress of meditation, right? What is your subjective experience supposed to be? Sometimes it's called like the psychology of meditation, if you like. So how is it supposed to feel? How is your mind supposed to develop as you do this meditation practice? Very useful, right? What's supposed to happen? Once you know what's supposed to happen, you have like a map, right? This map showing you the direction of things. And this is, I like to read this sutta out on every retreat that I teach, because I think it's very useful to have this kind of map in your head, and very powerful teaching of the Buddha. And I also always like to focus on the teachings of the Buddha. They are very, in my experience, very powerful and very useful, very profound. And one of the things that you find when you read the discourse is that the Buddha is often called the teacher. So this is one of the epithets of the Buddha, right? He is the teacher, with a capital T, the teacher. And this is one of the things that we often forget, I think. And it's happened, obviously, over the centuries, over the millennia, but certainly also in the present day, that the vast majority of teachings we get are not actually from the Buddha, but from all kind of other teachers, like myself or whoever it is. But it's very rare to actually get to hear the word of the Buddha himself. But it's very, once you get into it, it's very powerful and very beautiful. If you don't enjoy it, that's fine. But I always think it's worthwhile at least trying and seeing if you can get into these teachings, because they actually are very powerful. They're often very simple. They're very direct and very often, not always, but usually quite easy to get access to. People think that, oh, teachings of the Buddha are so hard, so difficult, can't really do it, can't really read them. Actually, I find them more straight to the point, more simple, more direct than the vast majority of teachings given by others. Okay, so this is this teaching, and I will explain it, read it out first of all, and then I'll explain what is going on here and try to draw out some of the implications for meditation practice. It's a bit repetitive, so be ready for the repetition, because this is the nature of, these are oral texts originally given orally, and that's why they are very repetitive. Monks. For a virtuous person, one whose behavior is virtuous, no intention need be exerted. Let non-regret arise in me. It is natural that non-regret arises in a virtuous person, one whose behavior is virtuous. For one without regret, no intention need be exerted. Let joy arise in me. It is natural that joy arises in one without regret. For one who is joyful, no intention need be exerted. Let rapture arise in me. It is natural that rapture arises in one who is joyful. For For one with the rapturous mind, no intention need be exerted. Let my body be tranquil. It is natural that the body of one with a rapturous mind is tranquil. For one tranquil in body, no intention need be exerted. Let me feel pleasure. It is natural that one tranquil in body feels pleasure. For one feeling pleasure, no intention need be exerted. Let my mind be stilled. It is natural that the mind of one feeling pleasure is stilled. For one who is stilled, no intention need be exerted. Let me know and see things according to reality. It is natural that one who is stilled knows and sees things according to reality. Okay. So I told you it is a bit repetitive. And sometimes people say, oh, boring, so repetitive. But please don't think like that, because it's actually very, sometimes it's beautiful. We get into this nice rhythm, right? Only one term changes for each time you go through the sequence. And once you start to focus on that one term, it means you get a very clear idea of what is going on. It's very simple, and this actually helps you to get clarity about what is happening here. Now, one of the most important things about this sequence, one of the things that really stands out when you see this, right? This is about the psychology of meditation. This is about the first person experience, how you feel, how meditation ideally is supposed to happen for each one of us, how you're supposed to experience it, right? Now, what really stands out about this straight away is the amount of the different degrees of happiness that I talked about here. It's all about experiencing happiness one way or another, right? It starts off with non-regret. That's almost at the very beginning. Obviously, non-regret is also a type of happiness. Remember, when we talk about happiness in Buddhism, it's not just about feeling, you know, joy and all these positive states. It's also about abandoning the suffering and the problems in life. So because regret is a problem, a type of suffering, non-regret, therefore, is also a type of happiness. From that comes joy. From joy comes rapture. Rapture is just more joy, really. Right? You just have to figure out some English words that kind of sound about right. So rapture, okay, rapture, more joy. Tranquility. Well, tranquility is a bit like the peace and the stability of the body that you feel in meditation practice, when you really feel, wow, this is so nice. I want to sit here forever. This is kind of what tranquility is about. Then you have pleasure. And then you have the stillness of the mind, right? One thing after another, one type of happiness after another one. And this is what the Buddhist path of meditation is about. So isn't that great? Isn't that a wonderful thing? Isn't that sort of, yeah, I want to be part of this. This is what I want to do. What else is worth doing in life? If you can get this kind of joy, this kind of happiness, you feel that the purpose of life is being fulfilled. This is what I always wanted. This is the meaning of things. What else is life about, right? And once you get into that, you really start to see that these Buddhist teachings, they actually take you where you always wanted to go in the first place. So very powerful. So, of course, the first question that people ask, well, okay, sure, you have all this happiness there, but what about me? I'm not experiencing this kind of happiness and joy, right? And it actually is not everybody will experience this kind of happiness and joy. Not everybody will experience it all the time. Sometimes you get a little bit access to these things, other times you don't. Sometimes you don't get any of this stuff, right? And you wonder, is there something wrong with me? What is happening here? And the answer is, again, this is the ideal way that meditation progresses. But there are many advantages in meditation, many benefits of meditation that happen even before you get to these happinesses, right? You just sit down and you feel at peace. That's already an advantage. You sit down and you let the problems of the past disappear into the past. That's another advantage. So the advantages are there from the very beginning. But this meditation that is talked about here is more like when it really starts to take off. So don't feel, the first thing is, don't feel discouraged because these things aren't happening. Rather feel, this is, wow, this is the potential. This is what will happen if I continue to practice these things in the right way. this is the first thing to remind yourself, right? And what this means is that when you sit down and you meditate and you feel that it isn't really happening the way it is said here, very often you feel, for example, you will feel drowsy in your meditation practice. So why is that drowsiness happening when you sit down and relax? How do we overcome that? Because it is often a big problem. It's two big problems people have. One is thinking too much, another one is drowsiness. So first of all, drowsiness, because that is quite common at the beginning of any meditation retreat. Right? So why does that happen? Why doesn't the happiness arise? Why do you feel tired instead? And there's two reasons why you feel tired. The first one is simply because it is natural to be tired when you work hard, you do a lot of things, your attention is scattered on all kinds of things. So the first thing to do when you feel tired is just to relax. Just allow and see if the tiredness passes all by itself. And often it does, sometimes it doesn't. But if it does, great. And then once it's passed, once the tiredness has passed, mindfulness starts to arise and you get a sense of clarity about what you're doing here, right? You can watch things, you can be aware of what's happening, and then meditation has a chance to take off. But sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes the tiredness just persists even though you start to feel well rested. So what are you supposed to do if tiredness persists? And this also happens to people quite commonly. Well, what you have to do then is, the problem there is that the mind doesn't have enough natural inclination towards the things I was talking about yesterday, the right attitude, right? You have to build up more right attitude inside of yourself. And all this building up of right attitude, of all the right qualities, that is what all the other factors of this path are all about, right? So if you practice, if you really build up a good heart inside of yourself, and you really start to feel good about yourself, then these things happen. When you feel good about yourself, joy, gladness, happiness tend to arise as a consequence. And it is very easy, quite easy to see. You can actually see these things for yourself. And this is very much part of the law of karma. I'm sure most of you have probably heard about the word karma or karma, as it is usually spelled these days. And this process of karma is something you can see inside of yourself if you are observant and you have enough clarity and mindfulness. And the process of karma is very simple. The process of karma is that when you do a kind act towards somebody, if you observe what happens in your mind when you do a kind act, you will see that what happens inside of your mind is that you feel a sense of brightness. You feel a sense of uplift. You feel a sense of clarity. It's as if you are lifting yourself up, right? An act of goodness lifts the mind up. It's like a balloon soaring in a sense. And you're cutting off some of the lead which is holding it down. And you can feel that when you do something good. Why does that happen? It happens because when you do something good, you have no choice but to take ownership of that act. It feels to you, I did this, right? Let's leave aside the kind of more philosophical questions, whether you really did it or whatever. It's kind of irrelevant for this. But it feels like you did it. So I did something good. So you feel good about yourself. Brightness comes up. Energy arises in the mind. Joy arises in the mind, right? Because you feel it's natural. If you help a little animal or something, or you do something kind to somebody, you say something good. Little things that, you know, we sometimes do in our ordinary lives. And sometimes we do it for no apparent reason. You just want to do it. And then you feel this all these good qualities in your mind as a consequence. It's really worthwhile. It's very powerful, incredibly useful. If you do the opposite, if you do something negative or bad towards somebody, then afterwards you feel bad about yourself. It's like you are depressing your mind, right? You feel a bit more dark inside. A loss of energy, a loss of joy, a loss of mindfulness. Notice that. Sometimes we say things right on the spur of the moment. Actually, it wasn't really the right thing to say. It's very easy because speech happens so fast. But if you notice the effect on your mind, what you are noticing is karma in action. Karma in this life. You do something bad, the consequences are there straight away if you have clarity to see this. This is really what karma, the laws of karma, are about. the direct effect that things have on your mind. And so this is how, in the long run, if you practice in the right way, you do these things in the right way, you're actually lifting up your mind, making it more bright. And by avoiding the bad things, you are avoiding dragging your mind down and kind of depressing it, if you like. And this is the meaning here of this idea of non-regret. The regret is the natural feeling of I was responsible for those bad things, right? That natural feeling which just makes the mind a little bit more dark, less energetic, that is what is meant here by non-regret in this particular sutta. So this is basically how it works. This is how gradually, over time, you get over the tiredness and you give rise to joy and happiness instead. This is how these things work over time. So once you understand the process, once you understand how these things work, in my experience, it becomes much easier to apply it. And you start to change the course of your life. And when you meditate, because your course of your life is changing, you actually feel that lightness and brightness coming into your meditation practice. And that's when it starts to take off. So this is how to deal with these things. And the similar kind of process is also with the thinking mind. The thinking mind, once you start to get a bit of brightness in the mind, sometimes the thinking mind can become powerful because the energy can be fuel for more thinking sometimes. But ultimately what happens is that the happiness, if you have enough happiness in the mind, you don't want to think anymore. Because the happiness and joy is the glue for the mind to stay in the present moment. If the present moment is happy, if the present moment is beautiful, you don't want to go anywhere else. You don't want to think. And because of that, the mind starts to become peaceful right here and now. So this is how it's supposed to work in theory, right? The reality is it can take quite a bit of effort. You have to sustain that effort over a long period of time. You have to persevere. But then gradually, the results start to come as a consequence of right practice. So this is the first thing about this sutta, is about the fact that meditation is in the end all about pleasant states of mind, joy and happiness. And you can see why I was talking so much yesterday about not experiencing too much pain in meditation practice, right? Not experiencing too much tension and these kind of things. Not trying to force yourself not to be tired. If you try to force yourself not to be tired, people think, oh, I'm relaxing too much, I need a bit more. You know, if I sit up straight, if I kind of force myself to sit straight, then I'll be okay. But that very act of forcing that you do actually goes against the sense of happiness that you require on this path. That is not the best way to overcome tiredness through force. The best way to overcome tiredness is, as I just was saying now, you have to allow it to disappear and you have to practice the whole path over a long period of time, and then the tiredness comes to an end all by itself, as does the thinking mind. Right? And so this is how it works. And this is also supported, this is also comes out in another aspect of this teaching I was just reading out. One of the things I was saying here was that no intention is needed for these things to happen. Right? Quite literally, the Pali says, this cannot be done through intention. In other words, every step, one step after the other, it happens, it says here, it's in accordance with nature, that if you establish the previous step, the subsequent step, the one which comes after, happens all by itself. This cannot be done through intention. Right? It's the same principle, is that you cannot overcome the tiredness or the restlessness of the mind by an act of willpower, saying I'm going to force myself to be bright or whatever. No, it happens, one step happening after the other, as a matter of course. So what that means is really that all you have to do is just to learn to relax, to learn to be at ease, to sit back, to enjoy yourself. And as you do that, if the foundation is in place, if you have laid all the nice concrete, right, then you can build the house. But if you forget today the foundation and you try to build a house without a foundation, it's not going to work. But once the foundation is there, you just sit back and you just enjoy, and you just relax. And then the mindfulness and all of these steps, they arise by themselves as a consequence of that. So this is the, it's so easy, right? It's so simple. There's nothing you have to do. All you have to do is to be patient, to relax, and etc., etc. So it's actually such a wonderful, beautiful, and easy process. And this is part and parcel of why this is so such a powerful teaching, essentially. And of course, the truth, of course, is that just being patient, just being able to relax, just being able to sit back, often is not that easy. You want to be patient. You can't be patient. Why isn't this happening? I only got 2 days. I have to go back to work on Monday, right? So why I need it to happen now. I can't wait for, wait too long. But actually, it's better just to wait and nothing happening rather than getting impatient and trying to force it to arise. If you try to force it to arise, it's not going to happen. In the long run, much better just to relax and allow these things to happen in their own time. So that is the second aspect of this, right? So it is the things I've been talking about so far. It is a beautiful progression that shows you where you are, your practice is at. It gives you a sense of guidance. It is all about happiness, and it's about not doing anything but allowing things to happen by themselves. Now, one of the things, if this is a natural progression that happens by itself, then of course the starting point is so important. Right? Because if the starting point, if the foundation is laid and the foundation is in place, only then do all the subsequent factors actually manifest, do they actually happen. If the foundation isn't there, all the other things will not happen. And what is that foundation? Well, the foundation is then the first factor of this list, right? If everything else happens as a matter of course, the first factor is going to be very important. What is that first factor? Is translated here as virtue. Now, the word virtue in English doesn't really capture the full meaning of the Pali word. The word in the Pali word is sila, and sila means basically your character, your habits, who you are as a person. And this is why the idea of being good-hearted, right, is basically a good translation of this. If your habits are to have a good heart, if your habits are to be a good person, to do what is kind and right in the world, then that is what is meant by sila here. So this shows you, if you have problems, if there isn't enough happiness arising in your meditation, if you feel restless, if you feel all these other kind of things, there is only one solution to that problem. And that solution is to look inside of yourself. How can I purify myself even more? How can I improve my habits? How can I become a more good-hearted person? And if you do that, then the meditation will happen after you do that. Meditation is not about watching the breath in the right way. Meditation is not about, using your intention or will to kind of get into it. It's about establishing the cause at the beginning and then allowing the process to happen. So this is so important. And this is the thing about virtue or about good habits or character in Buddhism is that it's very broad. It's not just about the things that we often call morality in English, the morality of acting in a good way or speaking in the right way. But it's also about how we use our mind. And because it is about how you use your mind, it's very delicate, it's a very refined thing. And only when your mind starts to change does it actually really affect your meditation practice. So a very important part of the what we do is how we deal with our mind, how we use our mind in daily life all the time to look at the world, look at people around us, look at ourselves, in such a way that it doesn't drag us down, doesn't lead to negative mind states. This is a very important part of the Buddhist practice. And I will talk more about that maybe this afternoon and perhaps tomorrow, because this is all part and parcel of the same thing, which gives rise to this, gives rise to the possibility for meditation practice to happen. And once that is in place, then when you sit down, and all the factors are there, all you then have to do is wait. And then when you wait, these things happen. Let me just read through this list of things that are supposed to happen one more time, and just very briefly just comment on these things. Right? So non-regret. Remember, non-regret doesn't mean that you are blaming yourself. It means that your mind is pure and bright because you're not held down by things that you did in the past that weren't so good. So you feel non-regret. And of course, when you have that non-regret, often you have a sense of gladness, right? That was saying before, you feel good about yourself. And this is the basic joy that comes in the meditation practice, feeling good about yourself because you avoided the bad things and you did the good things in life. And then this gladness, once it starts to arise, that is when meditation becomes very easy. Then all you have to do is really wait, and that gladness becomes more powerful. And you start to feel, you can feel a sense of joy, like coursing through the body, right? And this is what is called piti in the Pali language. It is often felt as a physical sensation throughout your body, right? And then, as you move even further down the line, that becomes too coarse, right? So here is some of the happinesses you find, and you think, wow, this is so great. But that too becomes too coarse. And then you start to feel a sense of tranquility in the body. The joy coursing in the body can be a little bit disruptive if you want to be really, really peaceful. So you go to a place where you feel is tranquility. And this is where you start to feel like a rock. You're just sitting there. You're feeling really good. You have a sense of joy in the mind, which is now much more subdued. But your body feels completely like you barely feel it at this stage. It's still there. You can still feel it. But it feels so incredibly solid. And you don't want to move anywhere. Because it is just such a delightful sense of tranquility in the body. This is what is happening here, and this is how you know that you are heading in this in the right direction. Right? When you don't want to do anything in the whole world except sitting right here, feeling completely solid, no agitation, no restlessness, nothing happening at all. And just wow, just really enjoying yourself. And of course, that tranquility that you have then, that really is a type of happiness, of pleasure, that is even more profound. So that is the next step on this path. And when you get this very profound pleasure, and you don't want to do anything else, this is where samadhi and profound stillness of the mind arises from. And this is the things you will hear Ajahn Brahm talking about, the stillness of the mind. This is what happens here. You're completely inside of yourself. Not interested in anything in the whole world, and just experiencing absolute bliss and stillness. And the purpose of all of this is then the next step, because the purpose of all this, this is how far I read last time, is to know and see things in accordance with the reality. And this is really, if it goes even further down, I'm not going to read the rest of it, but this is really what you can say the main purpose of the Buddhist practice is ultimately, is to know and see things in accordance with reality. The further you go along this path, the more you will see things in the right way, but only when you get to the final full stillness of the mind will you see things fully in accordance with reality. Samadhi, stillness, is the cause for seeing things in the right way. This is kind of one of the other important messages of this particular sutta, is that only through samadhi, only through stillness of the mind can you see things in accordance with reality. Everything you see before that is going to be kind of murky because of the defilements of the mind. You have to abandon those defilements completely, have that incredible power of the mind that comes through stillness, and then you will see things in the right way. And then you're really getting way down on this amazing path of meditation practice. So that is how the Buddha describes the meditation practice, and it's very useful to keep this in mind. It is a nice guide for you to remember. It's like when you go to Sydney, you see the kilometer signs. Now it's only 2,000 kilometers to Sydney, right? You're getting halfway or whatever. It's such a large continent, so 2,000 kilometers already going well. So remember that, right? You have all these signposts there. So remind yourself of these signposts, and then you know whether you're heading in the right direction. And the first factor here is the most important one, the one about habit, who we are, our character as people. And that is what really makes, allows for everything else to happen. So that is all I want to say for this morning. That is half an hour gone, half an hour scheduled for this talk. I like to keep the talks a little bit shorter because otherwise the amount of information is perhaps sometimes too much. Please keep on enjoying yourself. Keep on remembering that if you're going to experience joy and happiness, you will never be able to do that through forcing yourself through pain in meditation practice. There's no way that pain is going to give rise to joy. There's no way that tension, if you feel tense, is going to give rise to joy. Only by relaxing, only by feeling at ease, is that joy going to arise. So this is a very, very useful little rule of thumb to head you in the right direction. Okay, so that's all for now. I'll see you again around 3 p.m. In the meantime, have a nice lunch, and then we'll talk to you later on.